I am Ari Melber, and welcome to the Beat's State of the Union coverage. President Biden now just hours away from delivering the annual address. White House aides are touting what they say could be an aspirational, positive, and almost classy address, taking the high road. We know Biden spent the weekend working on drafts at Camp David, aides eyeing ways to tout what they see as the administration's breaking records on job growth and navigating this post-pandemic economy and laying the groundwork for an official campaign announcement. Those are just some of the images we've seen coming out of the White House operation. There's also the extensive security, the extra fences going up at the Capitol today. This is just 2 years after the violent insurrection. All three branches of government represented on site with top officials. It is always a security challenge as well. Now, I'll tell you this straight up. Media and viewing habits do evolve. We are in this digital era. But we also know that tonight matters in a very real way, even if you're not a news junkie. The State of the Union breaks through more than any other scheduled address. The nightly audience for the top cable news networks, for example, numbers several million. Biden's speech last year, we checked, it reached almost 40 million Americans. That just means that many more people who might not be hearing the president regularly or at length will hear from him tonight. And that's why the night can create such memorable moments.
The era of big government is over.
I have no more campaigns to run. My only agenda, I know because I won both of them.
One year of Watergate is enough.
Constitute an axis of evil.
You see Nancy Pelosi there, a memorable part of that last address. Well, tonight, it is her replacement, Kevin McCarthy, who will flank the sitting president. It's a visible mark of divided government after Republicans retook the House in the midterms while also underperforming in many of those races. Now, in some of the previews we have, it appears that Biden will call for higher taxes on the wealthy, for more social aid to the needy, and trying to strike a theme of unity. For Democrats, the speech tonight does have a certain type of high stakes because a lot of Democrats actually have this funny kind of mixed feeling about the Biden era thus far. They see it as a challenging more about messaging than results. If you talk to Biden allies, they say he has excelled at governing during a vexing period after the pandemic and the Trump presidency, that he has always led with a kind of attempted unity and grace, whether Republicans will meet him there or not. And he's got the jobs numbers at his back, but they also say he has not been able to sell the same record. That tonight is a chance to speak to those tens of millions of people I mentioned who might not normally be tuning in and make sure they know about record jobs growth. They know about a pandemic rebound. They know about inflation, a real problem, perhaps getting a little bit under control. So let's get into it. I'm joined tonight by Eugene Robinson, Pulitzer Prize winning columnist for The Washington Post, and Aaron Haynes, an editor-at-large for The 19th and an MSNBC contributor. Welcome to both of you. Eugene, this ain't your first State of the Union. It ain't your second. We love your experience. I'm not suggesting anything other than your expertise. But you have been through a bunch of these. What do you think is important for Biden tonight, especially as mentioned when the White House feels like, if anything, there's some good news that hasn't been absorbed by the country for them?
Well, first of all, State of the Union addresses are rarely memorable addresses. If you take them as speeches, there's not a Gettysburg address among any of the entirety of the State of the Union addresses, because they tend to list accomplishments and goals. And so I think a lot of the speech, just because it's a State of the Union speech will be about accomplishments and goals that the administration has. In terms of getting his message across, as you said, President Biden will have a large audience tonight. And so he will be able to tell people what he believes he's accomplished for the American people and what he intends to do if Congress will cooperate, which is a big question mark, obviously. And so there will be people who are hearing some of this stuff for the first time. So You know, messaging, it, in order to be good or bad, it, it does have to be heard. And so to say that they have a messaging problem, well, I guess it, it is a problem if people aren't paying such close attention as you're paying or as I'm paying. But that's the fact. And so the first thing is to let people know what you think you've done and what you think you want to do over the next 2 years of your presidency.
Yeah. And Aaron, we also have, of course, on the Republican side, the response, the pre-buttals, all of that, including why it shows why there are hurdles to unity. Take a look.
Tonight, we'll undoubtedly hear dizzying spin from Joe Biden.
The American people, they don't need to be lectured.
We have a government that now, I believe, is targeting the very people it is supposed to serve.
Aaron?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, Ari, just to pick up on Eugene's point for a minute, the thing about State of the Unions is, one, they're also, a lot of times for the president and for the administration, the beginning of a conversation with the American people who may just turn their attention to kind of what the administration
is. Aaron, we have an audio problem, so I don't mean to give you pandemic Zoom flashbacks, so we're going to try to fix Aaron's audio and bring you back in. Gene, we also have, while we work on that, the reporting from around the nation, folks checking in with folks talking about what's coming down the pike tonight. Here's two voters talking about what they might like to hear.
I think he needs to do a better job of getting the Democrats and Republicans to put aside the differences and to focus on just the issues for Americans so that we can, like I said, continue to get better. Don't tell us what we want to hear. Tell us what he really has planned.
Don't insult our intelligence. Don't tell us it's great when it's not great. The economy isn't as great as he's going to say it is, and it's not nearly as bad as we were saying it was.
And so, Gene, that sort of overlaps with what you and I were discussing, especially the fact that it's been a lot. I mean, people feel like, gosh, what's the last 5-6 years been like? A lot. And so while some things are better from a Washington perspective of saying, hey, here's the update, as we all know, a lot of folks are feeling different types of pain and don't want to just be told, oh, it's everything's great.
Right. Well, look, how many times has Joe Biden talked about bipartisanship? How many times has he talked about reaching across the aisle to work with Republicans to get things done? That is Joe Biden in his essence. That's who he is. It's who he has always been. And so sometimes to get a message across, you have to repeat it. But the woman who was interviewed who said that's what she wants to hear, well, that's what you'll hear because that he'll, you know, he will say that again and again and again tonight. He always says it. And for the voter who says, you know, don't tell us things are better than they are. Don't tell us things are worse than they are. I do think that's a valid point in that, yes, each party tries to put its most favorable spin on the situation. I will say, though, that the one thing that tends to be more ritualistic and substance-free than any State of the Union I've ever heard is any other party response to the State of the Union. That is an exercise that I've always thought was empty and not really worth the time. There was a time that Marco Rubio had the issue with the water bottle, which was kind of interesting. But beyond sort of faux pas like that, you talk about unmemorable speeches.
Yeah.
Those responses are less memorable than just about anything.
Yeah, it's tough. And it, the nature of it, you're responding to a president at the peak of their powers and the visual of that to just sort of, as you say, sitting somewhere with a camera and a tiny water bottle. We have a little more on that later in this hour. Aaron, I think it was Thomas Jefferson who said, microphone check, 1, 2, what is this? And I want to see how your mic is.
Well, let's see how it is. Can you hear me now?
You sound great, yeah. Yeah, go ahead, Aaron.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, what I was going to say earlier is, you know, the thing about State of the Unions is, you know, they are meant to be the beginning of a conversation with the American people who may just now be turning their attention to kind of what the administration has been up to. We're going to see, even coming out of tonight's speech, the administration hitting the road. People from, you know, the vice president to Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg out on the trail, you know, kind of talking about the accomplishments that the administration sees in their eyes. And, you know, Eugene was saying that the speeches are not necessarily particularly memorable, but there are moments sometimes that can be memorable. And a lot of that can come from some of the guests that are going to be in the House chamber tonight. We've already got some clues as to what the president's going to say to the American people based on who some of the people are that are going to be in the room. He's going to be putting a human face on issues from like immigration, infrastructure, reproductive rights, cancer, police reform, right? On that last issue, I talked to the mother of Tyre Nichols. She and Tyre Nichols' stepfather will be in the gallery with the First Lady tonight. That's the first time that there's ever been, you know, the family of a Black American slain by law enforcement that will be in that position of prominence, putting a real spotlight on this issue. There's going to be other families that are guests of Black lawmakers trying to bring attention to this issue. And so those people will hopefully put those issues front and center. That's what the administration is hoping is going to happen tonight. But to your point, I mean, the Biden-Harris years have been marked by these years of uncertainty in the country. And so tonight's message is kind of still aimed at what President Biden has run on all along. He's kind of locked still in this battle for the soul of the nation. And so a message of bipartisanship and unity is at least what he's going to try to say, although also to points raised earlier, it's unclear how many Republicans are willing to embrace that message in an increasingly divisive Congress and electorate headed into 2024.
Mm-hmm. And Aaron, appreciate you sharing your reporting on that and those moments. Really dovetail with what Gene was saying earlier, that it's not the Gettysburg rhetoric that's always remembered, but there are moments, there are the imagery, the pageantry, and sometimes, yes, the stories told through the people who are there. Since you mentioned that, and the politics of that, Aaron, as well, is that Joe Biden, in his mind, and he said publicly, he feels what he says a special link to civil rights issues in the Black America community, and the way that Clyburn and others obviously resuscitated a campaign at one point, really left for dead, politically dead. That's a constituency he's going to need if he does, as expected, run this reelection campaign at a time when there are prominent folks, Michelle Goldberg in the New York Times, greeting the State of the Union here with a call for him not to run again. As a reporting matter, Aaron, in no way are we seeing prominent Democrats or his allies talk that way in public. But what do you see politically on that in general, and specifically with the coalition that he needs to hold or revive if he's going to run and win?
Right. Yeah. You don't really see Democrats willing to be on the record, at least, although they are certainly talking anonymously to a number of outlets, especially in recent days, and particularly around the vice president and her viability. And look, I mean, Joe Biden did turn 80 years old, you know, just a few weeks ago. And his age is, you know, continues to be a question and something that is being discussed in terms of whether or not he should run. And, you know, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the Arkansas governor who will be given the response tonight, is the youngest governor in the country. And I don't think it's a mistake that she was chosen in part because she has kind of that distinction that she will be drawing between herself and President Biden, former president, her former boss, notwithstanding in his age. But yeah, I do also think that with you know, the Black community in particular, you saw just coming into State of the Union, you have the primary calendar being moved, South Carolina now being first in the nation as a nod to the changing demography of this country, the changing demography of the Democratic Party, and really those voters wanting a return on their investment, their votes that propelled President Biden and Vice President Harris into office. He certainly knows that's a coalition that he's going to need to win re-election. We expect him to announce that he will be running for a second term. And so really signaling to key coalitions that he sees them and that he is working on their behalf, even as, you know, in this challenging political environment, I think is something that he's also looking to do tonight.
Yeah. And some of that's the mood music. It sort of hangs over it almost implicitly tonight, but not as directly. Aaron Haynes and Gene Robinson, thanks to both of you for joining us, kicking off our coverage on a big night.
Thank you, Rory.
Absolutely. Appreciate you guys. We have our shortest break, 60 seconds. But when we come back, we're going to tell you tonight why GOP lawmakers are trying to clean up some of DeSantis and Shea Comanduri next. Welcome back to our coverage of the big night. The State of the Union is never really an even clash between the parties. It is chiefly the night of the party controlling the White House. We were just discussing this with two of our guests. But the opposition does get a turn with its televised response, although it can sometimes be dicey.
False choices like the one the president laid out tonight.
There it is. Oh, my God. Ah!
2 years ago when Barack Obama became our president.
So here it goes. But let's be honest.
Good evening and happy Mardi Gras. Was that?
Now, that's how it can go. As for what's happening in tonight's rebuttal, there are top Republicans who say Trump is a drag on the party. That's been proven. Mitch McConnell was lamenting the failures of Trump-style candidates. But for tonight's response, the party has tapped the actual face of Donald Trump, his actual White House spokesperson, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, known to more Americans for that role, defending everything Trump did than really for anything else, at least up to this point. She now holds her father's old job as governor of Arkansas. She'll deliver this rebuttal. It's a decision that some Biden aides think is actually a great contrast between what they view as this Trumpy past, which has failed in several elections, and President Biden's vision of a future for America. We want to get into it right now with a political strategist who has worked on the Obama-Biden campaign in the past, Shea Comanduri. Welcome back, sir.
Good to be back, Ari.
We covered the speech that hasn't happened yet. Now we're going to cover the rebuttal that hasn't happened yet. It is State of the Union night in America. But you've been through your share of these. Your thoughts on the rebuttal and Sarah Huckabee Sanders, of all people, being the face of the Republican Party, whether it's past or future, I can't say.
Well, I mean, to be fair, this is an extremely difficult speech to give because you cannot match the atmosphere, the ambience, the sheer power of seeing the President of the United States in front of Congress, Supreme Court. That just cannot be matched with a response. It's very much feels like in terms of James Bond going from Sean Connery to George Lazenby. It doesn't matter how good that movie was, and it was very good, Her Majesty's Secret Service, but you still feel you're watching a dime store ripoff copy. And I think that that aspect of it makes this speech very challenging. However, the GOP, I think, has done themselves no favors by picking Sarah Huckabee Sanders. It is a pick that makes very little political sense. For Republicans to win in 2024, they must win independents. They lost independents in 2022. They lost independents in 2020. They lost independents in 2018. They must win independents. Independents are turned off by Trump and Trumpism. Sarah Huckabee Sanders is world famous for defending Donald Trump on, you know, as press secretary. She repeated many of his lies. She came up with new lies herself. She has governor has already repeated many of the Trump era gimmicks, like banning the non-existent CRT in Arkansas schools. This is not somebody who's going to reach independent voters that the GOP needs. It makes very little political sense. And it's very similar, I would say, to the decision to keep Ronna McDaniel as head of the RNC.
Yeah, I mean, you're mentioning two planks where the RNC is sort of not always of interest to everyone, but it is the actual network and funding mechanism of the party. And then what happens tonight will be seen by far more people than who's a staffer at the RNC, which is, as you say, taking someone who's not just in the Trumpy wing. I mean, we could you and I can name other Republicans who are in that wing, but then are nominally independent about this or that issue or have their own policy. With all due respect to Governor Sanders and what she might do in the future, she could have a very long career ahead of her. She is known and her political career right now is staked on being that last line of defense, defending the indefensible, defending everything Trump did, being a literal face, voice and stand in for him. When you see that decision, then what does that tell you about the Republican leadership in D.C. right now?
Well, it's interesting because voters appear to have cooled on Trump. I mean, we see that in the voting returns and we see that in the polls. Donors have cooled on Trump. It seems to be the GOP leadership that is still very Trumpy and into MAGA. They're sort of trying to make MAGA happen, to use that famous phrase from Mean Girls. And I think what is going on is the MAGA movement is very much aware that maybe Donald Trump isn't their leader. They are very worried that the voter, the MAGA voter, will not show up. If the MAGA voter does not show up, the GOP is in real trouble in future elections. So they want to say that, okay, maybe Donald Trump may not be the future MAGA leader, but we have all the other MAGA things that you know and love. All of that is available to you. Mm. It's sort of like the drummer of Spinal Tap always being replaced, but the beat goes on. That's sort of the way I think the Republican leadership is looking at the MAGA movement and how to co-opt it.
Yeah, and I've never heard a direct comparison from Fetch, which they were trying to make happen so aggressively as slang and Mean Girls and the entire MAGA movement. I think Fetch, while not a great piece of slang, is probably less dangerous to democracy, though, Jay.
I agree, but it is a terrible a slang phrase, and I think Regina George was quite right to make sure that it never happened.
And you don't hear a lot of people defend Regina George anymore. I mean, during the spate of her popularity, yes. But by the end of the film, no. So I see you, as always, being a bit of an iconoclast, which we appreciate.
After experiencing Sarah Sanders, I think that Regina George doesn't look as bad in comparison.
It's all relative. It's all relative. I want to play something that actually you alerted us to as we were preparing for tonight's coverage. You mentioned that it is a tough pull to do the response. Doesn't matter what party you're in. But you pinpointed one political example with a kind of a moderate Republican where the pageantry was, in some sense, matched. Let's take a look at this.
We're going to stop violent criminals in their tracks with real prison time for repeat offenders and a workable death penalty. We must send a message to our young people that crime doesn't pay.
Governor Whitman using her power and speaking there before an assembled group. Do we have any indications of what Sanders would do tonight, and why is that tool not used more often?
Well, that was probably the best Republican State of the Union response I can remember. And what it was is basically she was able to match the ambiance on some level of the State of the Union by addressing the state legislature. In addition, Chrissy Todd Whitman, if you remember, was pro-choice. She was pro-gay rights. She was pro-environment. She was specifically picked to appeal to the soccer moms, those Southern women voters who had grown very weary of the Newt Gingrich GOP and gotten scared of them. So they picked her very specifically for that. What has happened now is the opposite thinking has come into play. And Chrissy Todd Whitman has said this. She has said that she would never be picked to do a State of the Union response now because the party has gone so far right that she is no longer considered a Republican. That is kind of the logic at play. This is all playing to a MAGA base, to a MAGA movement, and basically they're telling independent voters, voters on the fence, forget about it. We're not for you.
Yeah, I mean, to riff on the earlier film allegories that you provided with us, the mainstream leadership of the Republican Party has become a bit of a MAGA-centered burn book, if you will.
Right.
And that's no way to treat people.
That is no way to treat people. And I think the independent voters have gotten that message, and which is why they have been departing from Republicans in very large numbers over the last three elections.
Respect. Well, here's to the big night and to all the Mean Girls references out there. Thank you, Che.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Coming up, we do have a briefing on this DeSantis mess and how they're trying to clean it up. Also, another attendee tonight that's so meaningful to so many people as we fight against violence and hate in this country, Paul Pelosi on his feet and planning to attend tonight, Ruth Ben-Ghiat, on the context of understanding the nature of the threats of political violence, an important topic we have for you as well tonight. Tonight's State of the Union will also, in a very real way, remind people that we very recently lived through a politically motivated attack at the highest levels of the U.S. government. then Speaker Pelosi's husband, Paul, was violently attacked, smashed with a hammer by a suspect who was now basically charged with attempted murder over that. The intent, though, was not just to go after Mr. Pelosi. It was to kidnap the then Speaker of the House. And had a few things gone differently, it might have been much, much worse. That's clear from what we've learned in the security footage and about the event. So tonight, Paul Pelosi will be not only there, but specifically a guest of the Bidens at the State of the Union. This is by far his most clear public appearance since that violent attack.
How are you?
What's going on, man?
Everything's good.
Hi. Drop the hammer.
Nope.
Hey, 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 hey.
What is going on right now?
I'm not getting an answer on call.
Bro,
the video of that key moment, obviously quite disturbing. Also, it is exactly the kind of unassailable evidence that has punctured a campaign of lies before we got the video, and even some of them persisting after we got the video about what really happened. So Pelosi's appearance is also part of the wider conversation that we continue to have in America against the backdrop of both lies and political violence. The extremism is mounting. It is not naturally dissipating, going away, nothing like that. The Senator Cruz and Marjorie Taylor Greene will also be there tonight. Cruz is one of the people there in the upper chamber who came in second for the Republican nomination for president, who had amplified doubters and conspiracy theories undermining the attack. Greene was suggesting that it wasn't an attack at all, that somehow those two individuals knew each other. She was also presiding over the House floor in Speaker McCarthy's absence yesterday, another sign of how, according to many, she is a legitimate member and leader of the Republican Party, while giving comfort and aid before and after the fact to attacks like this. We're joined now by NYU history professor Ruth Ben-Ghiat, an expert on fascism. Welcome back.
Thank you.
I want to start with this contrast and the way that these folks are being treated and respected within the leadership of the Republican Party. Because, you know, sometimes it's very hard to see the problems perhaps in your own home or your own community in some way. You say, oh, well, when it's abroad, we go, oh, my God, look at the obvious fascism. I mean, you have this party and they're treating these violent fascists like they're legitimate. And again, I always am very clear. I name names. I'm not talking about all Republicans or ideological profiling. I'm talking about those individuals with that record. What does it mean for Americans to understand, especially tonight, that this is happening to some degree here at home?
Yeah, the frame for this is that the GOP, the leadership, it's become an autocratic party. And as January 6th showed, because none of them have any remorse for January 6th, they believe that violence is the way that you change history. And this is common to all extremists, where you don't respect, you know, parliamentary or congressional procedure. You don't recognize peaceful transformations of power, transitions of power. You use violence to get your way. And this is what extremists have always done from the fascists until today. I'm very haunted by the fact that with everything going on and threats against lawmakers, what happened, what was intended for Nancy Pelosi, that GOP lawmakers very recently showed up with assault rifle pins on their lapels. And as somebody studies fascism and military coups and extremists, what do you do when the lawmakers are wearing symbols of death that say that, you know, their party is a death cult on their lapels as they're sitting in Congress? What does that mean?
Yeah. And so when you look at Mr. Pelosi there tonight, what do you see? What do you diagnose in the balance between very overt references to support some of that and minimize the insurrection in order to try to provide actual defense or support for those involved? What do you do with squaring that with then the lies and the conspiracy theories? In other words, it's, oh, they have the tough muscle that's going to support them. That's the authoritarian bent. But then also all of these lies suggesting that it wasn't an attack on Mr. Pelosi at all when it clearly was.
Yeah, it's so important that he is there tonight. And it's very moving for me because it signifies that, you know, the rule of law and democracy is holding, that this person was not successful either in harming him irreparably or in getting to his intended target, and that we will go on and we will be resilient and resist this epidemic of violence, which is being abated by the Republican Party. And we have Trump, who's, you know, having dinner with neo-Nazis. We have attacks on power grids by neo-Nazis. But we have to always connect the dots and remember that when Trump came in, he, you know, signaled to neo-Nazis the whole time. And there are people like Representative Gosar who socialized with neo-Nazis. So it's easy to blame it all on Trump. But the GOP, as we see, has fully embraced the methods of violence. You know, Marjorie Taylor Greene went to a Young Republicans Club event recently and boasted publicly, wearing an elegant gown. She said, if I'd planned the coup, it would have succeeded and there would have been more arms. So these are violent extremists, and these are now our lawmakers.
Yeah. And it's important to, again, confront it and call it out, not let people say, oh, well, it's different here, or it's going to fade, or all of this sort of magical happy talk, when it's actually the opposite, the vigilance we need. Some of that will be, as we say, under the spotlight tonight. Professor, thank you so much.
Sure.
As we track this big news night, I can tell you there are traditions that tend to hold. One of them is you start to get these excerpts, and we're going to have these in our special coverage tonight. We have the first experts right now. I can tell you, according to the White House, that the president is expected to say on the economy that they're building one where no one is left behind. Jobs coming back, pride is coming back because of the choices we made in the last 2 years. We also know that Biden is keenly aware of speaking to a Republican House. I mentioned that at the top of our broadcast. In the brand new excerpts that we're reporting right now for the first time, the president will say, quote, to my Republican friends, fighting for the sake of fighting, power for the sake of power, conflict for the sake of conflict gets us nowhere, end quote. These are the first two excerpts we've received, and if tradition holds, we may get a few more before the president formally takes the lectern tonight. We will keep you appraised of all of it. Here on The Beat, we have more coming up, including the problem in Florida with Ron DeSantis' extremism when we come back.
Clean up on aisle 5.
Clean up on aisle 12!
Clean up on aisle 3. I got it.
You've heard it, or you've seen it in the culture. Sometimes you just have to clean up something in the aisle at the supermarket. Well, in a way, that's what's happening in Florida. You have Republicans down there that are going into a special session. Okay, that's a lot of work. It's a whole extra thing. They need to clean up and fix messes, as one outlet put it. Fix the flaws in DeSantis' laws. At the top of the list is a controversial move to try to fly migrants to other parts of the country to score some sort of sick political points. But the state law says they could only do that if those individuals came from Florida. And as we reported, DeSantis found some of these folks over in Texas. Here's how he tried to explain it at the time.
The problem is we're not seeing mass movements of them into Florida, but it's just coming in onesie twosies. But there's no way you can possibly track all of that because it's on such a small scale.
Yes, it's on the onesie twosie scale or whatever. Anyway, DeSantis is facing this lawsuit over those migrant flights. The question is, and we explored this at the time, there were ethical considerations, there was moral criticism, but there's also an open question over whether he broke the law in pushing the flights. So this may be the context as well for Republicans rushing to clean it up before the courts get involved further. So in the special session, these lawmakers are going to change the law to let DeSantis, quote, transport migrants from anywhere in the U.S., not just Florida, and then remove some unconstitutional provisions that could also, well, stack up to show that this person wanting more power, potentially running for president, can't even follow or use his own state laws. Now, if you think about it, it's not clear that judges or others will be impressed with this maneuver. It's not like usually if you're not governor, you can just take something that was unconstitutional or illegal, have your friends say after the fact they want to make it legal, and then claim it was legal back at the time. If anything, the fact that they have to do this kind of reinforces the sense that maybe it was not legal at the time. Now, again, it'll all be fixed potentially not by the legislature, but in court when these folks get their day in court, and we will follow that as well. In the meantime, it looks like a pretty sloppy cleanup on Al DeSantis. We're going to finish a break, but when we come back, we're going to show you why there is so much outrage on Fox News about the music and diversity stories we shared earlier in the week from the Grammys. This is a political story with a little bit of culture, and it's next. This year's Grammys made a big splash, but now they're also sparking some political clashes. You know, just like viewers have all kinds of options for tonight's State of the Union, they can watch live or later or flip over to Netflix, these award shows also face stiffer competition than ever before. So it's actually striking to see that Sunday's Grammys surged back to a three-year ratings high with 12 million viewers. Lots of excitement about how a once behind-the-times ceremony is finding ways to embrace diversity and platform some rebellious voices. Madonna spoke to that in her shout-out to why sometimes she said you got to be problematic and provocative. The judges awarded artists who we know were once snubbed, like Kendrick Lamar. They also made history with the first Grammy for a transgender artist, Kim Petras, who performed the hit Unholy in a bright red nod to fiery devil's imagery. You can see some of that here, complete with horns. And this particular performance from Sunday has triggered conservative commentators.
Is it really a good idea to mimic devil worship? Because what if it is true?
They full on embraced Satanism.
I'm hearing there was a bunch of woke stuff, too, unsurprisingly.
There always is.
It's the mark of a desperate entertainer when they have to go back to the well of Satanism.
That's the most woke place around.
Tonight's Transgender Satanism brought to you by Pfizer. Inject their products into your body.
I don't know if that's real laughter or what that is. But the playbook we do know. It is the right's old culture war playbook, remixed with some word salad in there about being woke and supposed outrage about that Satan imagery, and perhaps a fear of the more diverse and inclusive trends in America. You can see some of the headlines about the reactions. But let me take this seriously with you just briefly tonight. What these politicos on the right miss is something important, that at its best, culture, in this case, our homegrown American culture, can be more open-minded than the mind-numbing daily political battles. Consider that the Sunday night Grammy performance finale, which was so celebrated, and we have it up on the screen for you, is steeped in Christian imagery, a Last Supper-style table of goblets, and the chorus in that song about the power of belief, which is why DJ Khaled says that when no one believed, God did. That was the finale performance. Deeply Christian. And that spirit confidently coexisted with the night's unholy performance we showed you that upset so many people. How did that happen? Because art doesn't require you to choose, let alone issue political endorsements, or choose one idea or one view or one taste. Art offers a chance to experience and feel, to be exposed, and then just see where it takes you, if anywhere at all. And, done right, the only price of admission is being willing to go on the ride. So, given all the kerfuffling we're seeing out of D.C. now and people who deliberately or accidentally miss the whole point, we will just say tonight, shout out to the artists taking us to new places, and apologies to these sad, laughing political pundits, apparently too fearful to even consider getting on board. It's State of the Union night, and we will be right back. It's State of the Union night in America. There is the Capitol Dome. We are just hours away from the president beginning his remarks. We have the live picture there, and Biden will speak at 9 p.m. Eastern to this joint session of Congress. Earlier today, there were Biden voters that NBC News interviewed about what they hope to see tonight. And this other question we mentioned that sort of is circulating on the margins, whether this president should run again.
I'm kind of wishy-washy on that. I'd say that I haven't been hugely disappointed in some of his leadership.
I would be amazed and inspired if he stepped down and let somebody younger and more progressive push forward.
Well, what other Democrat would run in this place? I actually would be curious about that, actually. It'd be interesting.
We do that around here, too. Sometimes you answer the question with a question, but the question is your answer. The White House says you don't need to look for other Democrats. You have an incumbent president who's doing very well, and tonight is where he will use the primetime address to try to make clear what the ingredients for that are. Now, there is a recent poll showing that 62% of voters say Biden has not accomplished very much or even potentially little or nothing. So that is some of what he's going to address tonight. We're told he's going to talk about the job surge, talk about unity, talk about a high road approach to working with this Congress. And our coverage will continue. We have the readout coming up and then the special coverage. Rachel, Nicole and Joy helming that. I will be there along with the rest of our team for some of it. So we are excited. You can see that here, obviously on MSNBC or stream it on Peacock. Now, before I sign off on the beat, I do have one question for you, and it is a real one. You can answer it however you want at arimelber.com. What is your drink or snack for tonight's State of the Union? You can tell me at Ari Melber on social media, Twitter, wherever. What is your drink or snack tonight? You could tell me the literal answer because it's an evening. Maybe you're having some dinner. Or as I know, some of you sometimes get creative and I read and retweet on Twitter, for example, some of your responses. You can also, as always, connect with me at the top address, arimelber.com. And you can find our YouTube videos at msnbc.com/Ari for all of the Beat's highlights.